Okay, should we start anyway? So this, the original title was going to be "Who Owns the Earth," but that would have given the wrong impression. It would suggest I was going to list all the people, rich people in the world. But I wanted to discuss a much deeper level than that, and that is why are parts of the Earth owned by individuals in the first place? So that's what I'm going to talk for about 50 minutes or so. Now, you know, to most people today, that productive resources should be privately owned seems normal, even natural. It's even seen as the basis of civilization. And this is not really surprising, since this is a view put forward by all the so-called leaders of opinion, economists, politicians, philosophers, and priests. But it didn't seem so obvious to our ancestors, particularly our earliest ancestors. To them, what seemed normal was that everybody should have free access to nature and its resources to satisfy their needs. It was the private ownership of land which deprived some of access to it that would have seemed abnormal. Now, the first human societies, or the first humans, would have been hunter-gatherers. I mean, society is probably a rather grandiose term. We're talking of small bands of, I don't know, 100 or so people, call them, I don't know what you want to call them, bands or tribes. But these groups of humans had free access to satisfy their needs, free access to nature, you know, to use various tools that they had to extract from nature what they needed, and then ensure that all the members of the group had their needs met. Now that humans lived in such communistic communities for most of the time we've been in existence, I mean, in itself it's a refutation of the ignorant objection to socialism that it wouldn't work because it's against human nature, against the supposed need of individuals to own individual humans to own and accumulate private property. And the fact is that for 30 out of the 40 or 1,000 or so years that modern humans have been in existence, we did live without private property, without parts of nature being owned by individuals. And what was produced was shared in such a way that everybody's needs were met. Now, it is true that this did come to an end and that parts of the earth did come to be owned by individuals, but this wasn't because human nature eventually managed to assert itself after 30,000 years. It was because the way that humans survived in nature, their mode of production, if you like, it changed. In agriculture and the domestication of animals, increasingly replaced gathering and hunting. Of course, agriculture involved settled communities and allowed an increase in production, so also an increase in the population. Now, the adoption of agriculture in itself would not or did not automatically lead to the emergence of private property and to the end of the communistic conditions under which early humans had lived for so many years. What it did do was to open up the possibility of this happening. And we know, in fact, that communistic practices, such as the periodic redistribution of cultivated land, collective harvesting and house building, and the right of every member of the group to have their basic needs met, survived long after the adoption of agriculture. I mean, frankly, we don't know how private property emerged, and we never will. All we can do is to make reasonable and reasoned assumptions. I mean, one obvious possibility is the conquest of a settled agricultural community by some nomadic community. Then the land of the settled community would become the property of the conquering tribe, whose members would become the ruling class, and the agriculturalists as their serfs or slaves. And others have suggested how the same sort of class division could emerge within a settled agricultural community, with the members of one of the families, perhaps the one that was responsible for storing things that could later be given to people who were in either a more practicing way, or a military leader or religious chief. They were emerging as the effective owner of the land. I mean, this would have been a longer process than conquest by another group. But the end result would have been the same. The breakup of the original communist community and the coming of private property and minority class rule. But the memory of an earlier period of common ownership and distribution according to need seems to have survived amongst all people. All cultures have a golden age of this sort. And this is one of their legends. I mean, this even applies to the dominant cultural influence in Europe, Christianity. I mean, right up until 300 or 400 years ago, Christian theology thought that God had originally given the earth to all humanity. I mean, not just to those humans alive at any one time, but to all future generations of humans. You know, all humans, the Christian theologians thought, originally had an equal right to satisfy their needs, and so an equal right to use the resources of nature for this purpose. Now, in his 1910 pamphlet, Labour, Nationality and Religion, James Connolly quotes various fathers of the Roman Catholic Church. Well, here's one from somebody called Clement, who lived in the second century of our era. The use of all things that are found in this world ought to be common to all men. Only the most manifest iniquity makes one say to another, this belongs to me, that to you. And then there's somebody else called Ambrose, who lived a couple of centuries later. Nature furnishes its wealth to all men in common. God beneficently has created all things that their enjoyment be common to all living beings, and that the earth become the common possession of all. It is nature itself that has given birth to the right of the community, whilst it is only unjust usurpation that has created the right of private property. So that was what the original fathers of the Roman Catholic Church were teaching. Now, since Christianity soon became the ideology of the ruling class of the Roman Empire, which was, of course, based on private property and class privilege, the Christian priests had to engage in some pretty clever footwork to explain how certain privileged individuals had come to own parts of the earth, which their God had given to all humans, drawn in common and on an equal basis. I mean, the argument they come up with was that while God had given nature or the world, the earth, to all human beings, possession by individuals, possession of resources by individuals, as long as these owners acted as stewards on behalf of humanity, and as long as they showed some charity towards the dispossessed. As such, arguments were never accepted by everybody, and communistic ideas have been an undercurrent amongst the oppressed throughout the ages, which were openly proclaimed every time there was a peasant revolt. I was in France in the 12th century, in England in the 14th century, and in Germany in the 16th century. And this, of course, is the origin of the idea of socialism. It wasn't something invented in the 19th century by Karl Marx. And the idea of a society of common ownership, social equality, production for use, and distribution for one's needs has always been there. Well, the best expression of this in the English language is by Gerard Winstanley and the Vickers in the 1640s and 50s. And his law of freedom put forward the view that God gave the earth to humanity to be a common treasury for all, and that this state of affairs should be re-established, and humans carry on production and distribution of wealth to satisfy their needs without property and without buying and selling. I mean, even as late as 1689, John Locke, in his justification of the glorious bourgeois revolution of 1688, which kicked out the king, and then the new king was appointed by Parliament, which represented, you say, the bourgeoisie gaining control of political power in England. Even Locke, in the justification of this, he had to deal with the argument that God had given the world to all mankind in common. Incidentally, his ingenious theory as to how parts of the world came to be justifiably owned by only some humans, which is in fact the labor theory of property. His argument was that you were entitled to the land if you'd worked it, and so mixed your labor with it. Of course, it had dangerous implications. It might have worked as he intended for individuals doing this, but of course, when production becomes collective, it could be turned against this. And if wealth was produced collectively, the land ought to be owned collectively. Anyway, Win Stanley was writing at a time when the present world system, capitalism, was beginning its rise to world domination. And capitalism essentially involves two things. Well, it has to be involved. First, a landless proletariat driven by economic necessity to work for wages. And second, production not just for some, but for the world market, and separating the producers from the means of production, depriving them of access to the land to grow their own food, so they would have no alternative but to work for some employer. Now, Win Stanley and the diggers were partly a protest against this, but in England, this process continued right up until the 19th century, with the landlord class, who controlled Parliament, passing Enclosure Act after Enclosure Act, expropriating previously common land and adding them to their estates. And this happened all over the world. I mean, in Africa, for instance, in the age of colonial empire, where they put a money, hut tax had to be paid in money, and the only way where people could get money was by going and working for some employer on a plantation or down the gold mines. And look at this sort of thing is still happening in some parts of the world. Now, the end result is what we see today, a world where in all countries, the land and the natural resources it contains are owned directly or indirectly by a tiny minority of privileged individuals. I mean, the world belongs to them. As I say, all the land surface of the globe is now divided up and is either the property of individuals or of states. A property society, as I said, emerged some 10,000 years ago, but capitalism introduced a new element to it, production for profit. I mean, the coming of class-divided society had already meant there was no longer any common social interest, only conflicting class interests. Capitalism made this worse by subordinating the needs of the majority, not just to the personal needs of the minority, as in previous class societies, but also to impersonal market forces. I mean, these acted as if they were natural laws imposing their will on those making decisions about production. They imposed profit-making as the priority, overriding all other considerations. At the moment, all over the world, production is in the hands of business enterprises of one form or another, some private, some state-owned, some mixed, it doesn't matter which. All these business enterprises are competing to sell their products and profit. All of them are aiming to maximize their profits. Well, this is not the result of the greed of the owners or managers, as has been suggested, but an economic necessity imposed on them by the forces of the market. If a business does not make a profit, then it goes out of business. Make a profit or die is the economics of capitalism. Now, under the competitive pressures of the market, businesses only take into account their own narrow financial interest, ignoring wider social and ecological considerations. All they look to is their balance sheet, and in particular, the bottom line, which shows them whether or not they've made a profit and how much. In the whole of production, from the methods employed, the choice of what to produce is distorted by this drive to make and accumulate profits. I mean, the result is an economic system governed by irrational market forces, which compel decision makers, however they're selected, whatever their personal views might be, to exploit the workforce, but also to plunder, pollute, and waste resources. Now, all these problems of pollution and the environment can be traced back to the fact that today production is carried on for profit and not to meet human needs. It's the profit system that's to blame. So if we're going to solve these problems, it's the profit system that has to go. We have to restore to production its original and natural aim of providing things that directly satisfy human needs, because we can't do this unless we're in a position to control production. We can't do that unless the means of production, land, industry, and natural resources stop being the property of individuals and states. What we need to do is to reappropriate the earth and make it once again common property, but this time on a world scale, not common property as in the past of some tribal community, but the common property of the whole of humanity. This is the only basis on which we can organize production, which after all is our relationship with nature, in an ecologically acceptable way. World common ownership is not a new concept. For instance, when they were discussing in the 1970s, dividing up the seas amongst the states in the same way that the land is doing, the idea of global commons before, you had of all people, President Nixon, talking of making the seas the common heritage of all mankind. However, this was not to be the common ownership by the whole of humanity, but common ownership by all the world's capitalist states, with all of them, each of them, having equal access to the oceans and the seabird underneath them. Incidentally, it took them 50 years to since only this March that the states of the world have signed a high seas treaty to try to limit the oceans becoming a complete capitalist free for all. A common ownership doesn't mean state ownership. It wouldn't be the science fiction nightmare of the Earth's resources being owned and controlled by a single world state. Not quite the opposite, but it'd be far from that. There should be no private property or territorial rights over any part of the globe. The Earth and its natural industrial resources should not belong to anybody, not to individuals, not to corporations, not to states. They should simply be there to be used by human beings to satisfy their needs. Naturally, there will have to be rules and procedures governing their use. So what we are talking about, in fact, is the disappearance of the whole idea of property and its replacement by the idea of access and use in accordance with democratically agreed procedures. Common ownership is, if you like, the same thing as no ownership. So what you could say we socialists are proposing is a society based on the no ownership of resources. Socialists are proposing, as I said, that the private property and territorial rights over any part of the globe should be abolished as the only basis on which the human species can set about arranging its relationship with the rest of nature in a rational and ecological way. Now, because, and this is a point that activists like Anitra and Nelson overlook when they propose a world of local, small-scale, self-sufficient communities, they're overlooking that the relationship of human beings and the rest of nature has now become, due to the development of the world market economy, a relationship between the whole human species and the biosphere as a whole. I mean, just look at the sort of problems that have been talked about, global warming, tropical deforestation, thinning of the ozone layer, and there are many more. All these are world problems, the problems which ignore the artificial state frontiers which crisscross the globe, and problems which concern the whole human race. So as I said, before we can do anything lasting and constructive to solve these problems, we have to get to own the earth. I mean, as Ambrose said in the 4th century, the earth should be the common possession of all. Win Stanley in the 16th century, the earth should be a common treasury for all. And, well, I suppose Nixon in the 20th century, if you apply it not just to the seas but to the land, the earth should become the common heritage for all mankind. Okay, that's my short introduction. So, as I volunteered to chair this meeting as well, it's open now for people to contribute or even ask questions.